Music has a special way of touching our hearts in ways many things cannot. And if you're tuning into this podcast, you probably think so too. On each episode of Classical Post, we uncover a creative mind behind music we find particularly exceptional. Coming to you from New York, Classical Post is created and produced by Gold Sound Media, a marketing and PR agency for the performing arts industry. I'm your host, Jonathan Eifert, creative director at Gold Sound Media, and I hope you find something inspiring in this episode. No matter what line of business you're in, building a new enterprise from the ground up isn't for the faint of heart. From defining your mission to marketing, payroll, and growth strategies, there's a lot to consider, and a lot of opportunities to give up when the challenges feel insurmountable. Conductor Luke McKendifer encountered many of those moments in his early days leading the National Children's Chorus, where he served as artistic director and CEO for 20 years. As he looked to expand the choir's reach beyond a handful of participants in Los Angeles, he hit a low point, needing to borrow money from his mother to pay the venue rental fee for an upcoming concert. But giving up on the organization and its talented young singers was never an option, as McKendifer shares on a new episode of the Classical Post podcast. To say McKendifer's vision for the group has come to life would be an understatement. Under his leadership, the National Children's Chorus has become one of the leading children's choirs in the world, with more than 1,200 students across 8 chapter cities performing concerts at leading venues around the globe every season. The ensemble even won a 2022 Grammy Award for Best Choral Performance and just released its first album, Illumin, which they recorded with the London Symphony Orchestra at the iconic Abbey Road Studios. In this episode, McKendifer and I talk more about his 20 years with the chorus and what's on the horizon for the ensemble in 2024. Plus, he shares the ways human connection inspires him to make music, how getting up early helps him hone his creativity, and why the best investment you can make in your life is a really good bet.
Hello, I'm Luke McKendifer, and I'm a person who cares deeply about music and what I feel music can do for the world in terms of bringing people together, in terms of how it can touch the human soul and how it can raise consciousness to a level of beauty and awareness that nothing else truly can.
Let's talk about aesthetics outside of music. Where do you find inspiration to create music? So really thinking about outside of the music world, you know, and I have kind of categories, but you could go in all different directions: art, design, architecture, fashion, cinema, or other things outside the creative industries.
You know, I really take all of my cues from what's happening in the world. So anything that I create musically or program musically is based on what I feel is happening within social temperament. If there is a certain mood that I feel that's happening right now in the world or in our country, if there are certain vibes that I'm getting from people in general, I try to have the music speak to what I'm feeling. And so I take all of my cues, not from what's my favorite song based on, you know, on my playlists. That's always fun when it coincides. But whenever I go to create programming, I'm always looking to create insight into the present moment.
In terms of creative industries, you know, outside of what you just said, does one particular industry draw you more than others?
Absolutely. I think all of the different creative fields that you mentioned are connected, and I'm not an expert on most or any of them. I'm more knowledgeable in some areas than others, but I feel that all of the creative arts are expressing the human condition on some level or another. And so I do feel that they're very connected. Fashion, art, I mean, architecture is the closest thing I can say to like a music frozen in you know, in time, or a moment of a piece of music. Because I feel that when I see certain buildings or I enter certain buildings, I can almost hear a certain sound that would go with that. And I feel that certain spaces create the pretense for certain kind of music. So I feel architecture for me is most closely related to music, but I see music in all of the disciplines that you mentioned, fashion for sure. Absolutely. But I also see it in things that are not necessarily creative. I mean, I guess cooking can be considered creative.
Yeah, absolutely.
The experience of food, anything that I feel is an expression of the human experience or the human spirit, I think is absolutely related to music. It's all interconnected.
I want to dig into a little bit of architecture and cooking, those particular things, as you mentioned. Let's start with architecture, because you're not alone. I mean, many people have this same sort of experience in, you know, working in the arts, where architecture is kind of like that manifestation of what you might hear, and you don't, you know, see music per se, but, you know, you can kind of see it represented in architecture. So, you know, are there any particular periods that you kind of are drawn to that inspire you? I know you kind of said that you walk into a space and you kind of feel a certain, you know, connection. And, you know, do you know any particular styles? Because I think that is very fascinating, which style people are drawn to.
Actually, I'm very open, and I'm not necessarily drawn to a particular style. It's just a particular building will draw me in. Sometimes even a particular building among many buildings by the same architect. So for instance, I love the architecture of Frank Gehry, but Walt Disney Concert Hall to me is the most beautiful building that I've seen that he's designed. If you compare that to, say, the Bilbao Museum there, when you enter Walt Disney Concert Hall, for me, more than any other concert hall in the world, you just can feel that something special and epic is about to happen. And that's part of the brilliant design of that hall, is that you don't need to wait for the music to start. The music has already started the moment you walk into that building. In fact, the moment you see the building with your eyes, you're already drawn by the sound almost, even though it's a visual. For sure, the Familia, Sagrada de Familia, by Antoni Gaudi in Barcelona. I mean, totally different period, obviously different style, and so innovative, especially in the way that it's in its final years of construction now. But that too, I have seen that building many times. I'm not sure if you've been recently, but it's in its most splendorous condition, with the so many glass panels, new ones revealed, that used to be covered by scaffolding. You literally walk in there. We performed there about 2 years ago, or 2 summers ago, and 1 summer ago, actually, last year. It's unbelievable. Like, you walk into that space, and now with all of the scaffolding lifted, it's like lasers, and it's just, there's so much light. The way that light is utilized in that space, and the colors of light combining as the sun moves, and hearing music in there at the exact same time. We performed at 3 concerts inside that building, and they were all different based on the time of day as well, because the mood completely changes, the lighting changes, and the hue of the different glass panels is completely different when the sun is in an alternate position. So buildings in general, I'm very open to how they can interest me. Yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily drawn to one particular architect or style. I'm just very open to being moved by architecture or by the art that surrounding that was created to be experienced.
So going back to that statement that you made about cooking, I've spoken to many other artists who also cite that, and, you know, for obvious reasons, I guess, but it's fascinating. So, you know, how do you view cooking in relation to music making?
So first off, I just want to let you know, I'm not a cooking expert. And I'm not a cooking aficionado. My expertise in cooking lies in the eating part. So I actually am very good at eating the food, but I love the entire dining experience. And what I think is so fascinating about cooking is that it really, I mean, it also is so similar to musical creation, because it's about the blending of ingredients. And whether you're composing a piece of music or conducting the forces of an orchestra or a chorus, you have the palette of so many different sounds, and you are basically curating the combination of the ingredients. Should we have a little bit more of this, or, you know, a little bit more, a little bit less? Should this be a little bit louder or softer? It's sort of creating in sound what a cook creates for palette. And so I think that there are such powerful parallels between the two. And I think that's why people love to combine them. So say at the Hollywood Bowl, for instance, people love eating and experiencing music. They go really well together. And for people, and for most concert halls where you cannot take food in, people normally have a fine dining experience before entering a concert hall. So again, I think they pair well together. And sometimes you have multiple things happening at once. So in one evening, imagine that you are attending a concert, you're experiencing fashion in the way that you're dressed. You are eating at an amazing restaurant prior to the experience of then the architecture of the concert hall and then listening to the music. I mean, that's four creative arts within the context of 2 hours alone. There's probably more in there somewhere we can find them. But again, I think they all blend together so well because every single one of them is an expression of the human experience.
Describe a routine you have in place that helps you live a healthier life.
I have started waking up early in the morning, and I'm not a morning person. So I'm the type of person all through my 20s and early 30s, I would go to bed at 4 a.m. I work super late. And then I would have to sleep later because I worked so late the night before. But upon the pandemic in 2020, it was so stressful and nerve-wracking because as the leader of a music organization, all of us, I mean, everyone in my position similarly felt, I mean, our organizations were under such extreme threat, you know, a threat of what? Well, annihilation. I mean, how are you supposed to have a chorus if you can't even be in the same room with people? How are you going to survive? How can you continue an educational program? It was so difficult to fathom and to deal with on a mental and an emotional level that I felt I needed to get ahead of any problem, any issue. And the way I did that was I reversed my schedule. I started going to sleep early and waking up early. And it was transformative, magical. So waking up at, you know, 5 a.m., you have so much time in the morning to be at peace and to think creatively. All of us in our various industries had to think as creatively as possible to survive and to think, how are we going to continue our mission? How are we going to continue our work in the face of these new conditions, which may prevent us from being in the same room, which for what it ended up being almost 2 years that we couldn't see shows at Carnegie Hall or any concert hall for that matter. So that's a very big ask. It's already a big job to lead a large music organization under any under normal circumstances. But then you add a pandemic on top of that and say you can't gather in a room, but you still need to survive and you still need to provide a meaningful service to all of the people that you serve. To actually have the space to come up with the solutions creatively to do that, waking up early in the morning was the only possible way. And it worked. Several mornings in a row, over and over again, thinking, how can we do this? How can we not only accept what has happened, but how can we go with it? How can we embrace it? How can we make something special and spectacular within the realm of this challenge? And asking that question, now you can't do that very well at 11 a.m. because the emails are dinging, text messages are flying, all the problems are coming in, and you cannot possibly be creative or your best creative self when you're being distracted, you know, every few minutes, or if you're in a triggered state of fear. So when a problem comes in, it's jarring, and then you have to deal with it. You can't think positively and creatively at the same time as being in that emotional state. So that quiet, private, alone time in the morning and that meditative state, that was the area where the magic could be created or where solutions could be devised that actually could and did work.
I love that. That's such a valuable piece of advice. I know it's your experience, but it's also advice, I think, to listeners, because that idea of getting up early, especially in the arts community, is kind of counterintuitive, because I think a lot of people in the arts, it does tend or skew later in the day in terms of the productivity or staying up late at night because of the concerts and the after parties and all of that versus being, you know, early in the morning and creating. So that's, yeah, that's very fascinating. I like that. And it could be related to what you just said, but the if we speak about energy, what energizes you then in life to keep going and to keep creating?
The thing, I mean, that's a very good question, because once you've done something many, many times, and this is my 20th anniversary with the organization, and when you've led so many performances, then you really have to ask yourself the question, why am I continuing to do this? Why do I keep doing this? Because I've already done so much. Like, do I need to conduct a ceremony of carols, or a fifth Durafle Requiem, or an eighth Handel's Messiah? I think you start to need better reasons than I just want to do it again. And so I have asked myself those questions. Why do I continue to do this? And I realized that what drives me is the joy that music brings into the lives of the people who experience it. When we do a performance at Carnegie Hall, when we do, or any concert venue for that matter, I'm just thinking of Carnegie Hall because it was just such an amazing, one of our recent performances that was so joyful. Many times I come into the lobby after the performance because I love to greet guests who came to the concert, and just seeing the light on their faces when they have just experienced what you have created, and knowing that you have generated that joy and that you have inspired so many people to come together and to bring that level of wonder and inspiration to so many people, that in itself is inspiring and motivating. And for me, when I was 22 or 23 years old, you know, any 21-year-old is just pure ambition. You know, at 21, you're like, I want to be, you know, a famous conductor. I want to, you know, conduct at a world-class level, all of that stuff. But when you actually start doing that, and you get to that point, you start to realize there's a much bigger goal here than the goals I had when I was 22. This is not just about, actually, it's not about me at all. I'm actually serving a much higher purpose, which is bringing joy into the lives of people, enriching the lives of people. And to me, there's nothing more noble than that.
I love that. Very good point. What is one specific product you highly recommend?
I always highly recommend to everyone I know, and especially friends who are furnishing their homes. They usually tell me something about their bed. And I always quickly jump in and advise them, do not get an expensive couch and an inexpensive bed, because some people deprioritize how important a good night's sleep is. And they also fail to recognize how much of your life you spend. I consider sleep so extremely important. If you are going to invest in any piece of furniture in your home, the bed is the most important place, because it is the place that you're going to get the best sleep and the best rest. And that is going to impact your life more than a chair or a table or how fancy your Viking refrigerator is, what model. So, to me, that is the place I think that many people just deprioritize and just say, oh, I'll just, you know, get this or that. And then just like, so you're going to sleep on a rock, but you have a $30,000 refrigerator. That does not make sense, because you're not sleeping in the refrigerator and getting your rest there. If you can't afford both, get the cheaper refrigerator and make sure that your place of rest is the highest quality possible.
Good point. What restaurant or bar do you love to eat at when you're in New York City? And then obviously, what do you order there?
I definitely enjoy going to Catch in the Meatpacking District. There are so many great items on the menu, but everything is spectacular. I've had so much fun eating in the cabanas that they have on top, the private cabanas. And the social vibe inside the main part of the restaurant is just really fun. And just the entire Meatpacking District is, I think it's the the best and probably the most trending, that entire area straight to the Hudson, the most trending area in New York. And it has been for a while, but especially with the development of Hudson Yards, more popular and just more exciting than ever. And so I love their restaurant. I think everything that they have on the menu is excellent and just really fun.
Let's pause for a second. Are you an artist or work at an arts organization? I founded Gold Sound Media to help you expand your audience through social media. My team and I work closely with clients around the United States, directly shaping their messaging through customized strategic content. One of our biggest success stories is our work for the Clyburn, where we drove 25 million viewers, making it one of the most watched classical music events of all time. Get in touch to speak with me directly about how Gold Sound Media can help you. Just head to goldsoundmedia.com. Now, back to the show. Congratulations are in order, right? Because 20-year anniversary for you as artistic director for the National Children's Chorus. How does that feel? I mean, what has your journey been like? I mean, 20 years, you can probably speak to a lot of memories and high points and low points. How do you feel at hitting that marker?
It's really incredible. And I just like, as you were asking that question, I was imagining so many different moments in that journey. It's been, we're still going strong, but it's a journey of a lifetime in creating this organization. And really, it's been such a thrilling experience to throw yourself 100% all in behind a cause that you believe in, where you say, I am going to risk it all and put all of my effort and all of my passion behind this one idea and let's see what happens. And maybe I'm going to let it, you know, there is one point, like, you know, when you're getting an organization started, like, it's expensive to run organizations. Payroll is not easy. There were many months, especially early on, where I did not get paid anything. And we insisted on still making payroll for the rest of the staff. But even then, I had begged everyone I knew for money. I had gotten donations from everyone. My mom had given me money. I had, you know, cashed out part of my investments. And I was even considering selling my car to pay for a concert venue rental for just so that the students could sing at it. I didn't want them to be disappointed for a concert that they were going to do. Funny thing was, I only needed $3,000 to pay that the venue rental and couldn't even come up with. I managed to at the last minute, but I remember there was one point that was really, really important where I sat up in, at night and I thought to myself, cause so many, the odds were stacked against me so prolific. I mean, so powerfully and so intimidating, you know, at how old was I? 20, 26, 25. And I literally had a choice to make. I could borrow money against the remainder of my investments that I had not cashed out and go farther down this path where it was not succeeding, like it was not financially viable, or I could just stop and say, call it a day. I tried it and I'm not going to go any further. And the thought that came into my head was, at the end of my life, in the last minute or two that I'm here on this earth, the thought came into my head that looking back, I would rather know that I did everything I could to make this vision come true and have failed, than to think I held something back and would never know what would have happened if I really went for it. So I would rather fail than not give it my all and then never know. And it's so funny. There's a great book called 3 Feet from Gold, because it was the last money I had and I made the decision to go for it. And I borrowed against the last financial resource I had. And all of a sudden, LA Parrot Magazine did a feature on the National Children's Chorus. And that was the break that we needed. All of a sudden, students started, you know, flocking to the organization. Then we opened in New York and started growing there. Then in Washington, D.C., I mean, now the National Children's Chorus is in 8 chapter cities, more than 1,200 students nationwide. You know, we have our international tours that just came out with our first major holiday album with the London Symphony Orchestra. Performances every year at Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center. We do many collaborations with the Los Angeles Philharmonic at Walt Disney Concert Hall. And last year, we also accepted a Grammy Award for Best Choral Performance. So it's the Grammy-winning National Children's Chorus. Can you imagine what would have happened if I would have stopped at that moment and said, I'm not going any farther? All of the things I just said would not have happened. And so it's a very humbling experience to have come this far, because I feel that so many things had to go right and so many things could have gone wrong. So I just feel very honored, extremely humbled by everything that I just mentioned, because no human being could just make all of that happen. You know, you can put out 20 amazing records and never win a Grammy. And we weren't even trying to win a Grammy. That just happened, you know, just like everything else just happened. But it did require me to put my full faith into what I'm doing and to not hold anything back. And it's a very scary thing to do that. So having come this far, the main thing I've learned is to surrender to the moment, because as much as we try to control everything, a lot is out of our control. And if we let go and just take that step forward and do the best that we can, you'll be surprised what life comes up with, because what has happened is far beyond what I ever imagined. And that's my big takeaway.
Well, what a story. I mean, that's incredible. First of all, congrats, because that is, you know, it's not just the 20-year anniversary. I mean, knowing, you know, with you just sharing the low points and how it led to those high points, it's so much more significant, it seems, at least on this end, you know, when I'm listening to this story, because it's one thing to achieve various things, but to know that that's where it kind of started, and then to win the Grammy, and then to also have a profile of an organization that is collaborating with and performing at these top organizations and venues across the country, in Europe, et cetera. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's really, really incredible. And you as, you know, the kind of brainchild, you must be so proud, so incredibly proud of that.
I am. I am very proud of it, but I'm also extremely grateful for all of the people who have believed in this mission and who have guided it forward. At the end of the day, I'm just one person. Like, as hard, even if I work 7 days a week, my hardest, I can't achieve everything that I just mentioned to you. Like, that took so many different people. Even if I am leading the way, there are so many spectacular people who joined this cause to make all of those things happen. And to them, I have such extreme gratitude. And believe it, at that moment when we actually did win the Grammy, and the four of us, the four conductors on that recording, walked up to the podium, the first thing that came to mind were all the faces of the people who believed in us before we were anything, who gave us donations when we looked like we were a lost cause, who like, we would never be there at that moment without all of those people. And I was very emotional. Of course, I was moved to tears, because it was so humbling knowing that this moment happened because of all of these people, some of them not even alive anymore. And their faces are flashing in my head as I'm taking those, you know, 25 or 30 steps up to the podium. And it was just really, really amazing. So I would have to say, yes, I do feel a lot of pride, but the overwhelming feeling for sure is gratitude, because I know that while something is an idea, or I may say this is how we should do it, it takes an incredible team and an effort and a community to make this happen.
You have a new holiday album, Illumine. It's been added to over 50 playlists on Apple. Tell us about that whole album, and then, you know, just kind of the, you know, the feedback that you've gotten so far from this.
Yeah, the album just is an extraordinary project, and it's something that I had always envisioned that we would do, but I wanted to do it on a truly truly epic level. And I'm glad we did it now as opposed to 10 years ago, because of what we were able to pull together for the album. First off, I loved the vision of the album. As opposed to just a holiday album of beautiful holiday music, I think that, again, being in touch with what's going on in the world, unity and how the power of music to bring people together really was the driving force behind the programming of the album. So we tried to feature many different cultural expressions of holidays, especially in wanting the most prominent cultures and ethnicities represented in the National Children's Chorus to be represented on that album. So that's why we did commissions, new music in Hindi. We had a piece, an arrangement commissioned in Tagalog. And we also had the beautiful Spanish carol, A La Nanita Nana, arranged a new custom arrangement by a Venezuelan-born composer to bring new context to that beautiful carol. And so because I feel we got to a place in society where we realized, wow, music is not just pretty, it has a purpose and it has a powerful purpose. The album at this point in time was extremely purpose-driven. So our goal was to show inclusion, love, and acceptance as much as we could. Obviously, you cannot represent every single culture on one album, but we tried to identify prominent communities within our national membership, and we tried to program around that. And so getting to record this at Abbey Road Studios in London and at Air Studios, and of course, collaborating with the spectacular London Symphony Orchestra, the playing and the singing and just every single track, I'm blown away by it, even though I worked on it, very, very closely on this project, listening, over and over through all of the editing and all of that stuff. When I listen to tracks and it just, it's just released last week, I can't believe it. I literally can't believe how beautiful it is. And it's very, again, very moving, very humbling, because it's just so, you can hear the feeling and the passion and the purpose in the voices. It's not just, let's sing these pieces well. And there's value in that. Virtuosity is a great thing. But when you can feel purpose and meaning and an intention within anything, but especially music, and you can hear it and it's palpable. And I think that's why this record is resonating so well. I mean, every person who has come across the album has not just said nice album, but it's one of the most extraordinary albums that I've heard. The rendition of this piece is the most spectacular rendition I've ever heard. We were so proud to sing Eric Whitaker's Glow, which is a piece, I know it is performed, but I wish it were performed so much more. It's so gorgeous. And that was the single that dropped before the album came out. So Eric Whitaker and the National Children's Chorus did a special collaboration on Instagram where the music video of that piece was released, showing the students recording it at in the studios and with the London Symphony Orchestra playing. I just feel... these collaborations are so spectacular and so meaningful and are bringing so many people together. It's just been such a joy.
It's awesome. And what an experience for students, children, to have those musical experiences early on in life. I mean, we talk about music education, in America, and how various schools, just kind of slash the music programs and this and that. It's just tragic. And to see how your organization is just celebrating music with children and teaching them, because, it's choral singing, as obviously is such a great way for kids to learn music and to be part of, learn various skill sets, obviously, but specifically get that extra music education in that they might be lacking in other places. So to have that support and then to have the exposure to great artists like composer Eric Whitaker, or others that you collaborate with, I think that's so meaningful. And also meaningful for the families too, knowing that, if you're a parent and your child is involved like that, that they're getting, some of the best education and experiences, musically speaking. I think that's phenomenal.
Yes. I think one of the phrases that I've heard many adults say that I dislike the most is, children are our future. And it really irritates me, because it discounts how important and how capable and how spectacular they are in the present moment. Children are not our future. Children aren't our present. They are people now. They are smart now. They are capable now. They can do great art, not after they've graduated from Juilliard, now when they're 11. Those kids on the album, there's kids as young as 11, you know, 10 or 11 years old on that album. When you listen closely, especially as a musician, there is an extremely sophisticated detail in every piece, from the shaping of a phrase, you know, it literally is professional level, what you would expect of a chorus of professional singers aged 40 and above, you know, who do this for a living. These children are executing musical detail on that level. And I think one of the part of the secret sauce of the National Children's Chorus and why I think what we do resonates so well with children is because they're not treated like the future. We treat them like the present. We talk to them and treat them like they are capable right now. And they love that. They love being acknowledged for what they can do. And so I agree with you. You know, it is a tragedy that music has been de-emphasized in the education system and in schools as if it's not important. I mean, these experiences that the students have within the program, it's not just extracurricular. It is life-changing. And I can say that now, having been in this organization for 20 years, because I have actually seen students enter at the age of 5 and graduate at the age of 18. So I've had a few of those already years is that 13. So I probably had, you know, a good number that I've seen go the entire way through the program. And students who come in sometimes with a lot of insecurity, a lot of trepidation about using their voices, all of a sudden now they are, you know, leading their school musical. They are, you know, doing so many things with confidence, and they very emphatically use their voices. And I've seen the change. So I've watched it happen. Not to the point where I theorize, oh, music probably is transformative for children. I can tell you, I've seen it with my own eyes over and over and over again. It's life-changing. It's that important. And so, yes, we can't control what the education system, I mean, but the larger public can. Our organization focuses on doing whatever we can in order to give them that resource. That's why our scholarship program is so extremely important, because we don't want any student who wants this educational experience to be turned away due to financial need. So making our organization accessible is a huge priority for us because of the issue that you just spoke about, and also why we have opened in 8 cities. We're not planning on doing more just because there's a certain level of accessibility. We want it to be in cultural centers within to offer the level of accessibility that we can organizationally handle, and 8 cities is already a lot.
That's a lot.
but that's the reason that we can create a consistent offering to so many children across the country, in many demographics. And again, it's an important reason for why we exist.
What do you have on the horizon coming up now that the album is out? We're heading into 2024. What is on the horizon?
So you had earlier asked me a question on what do I do for wellness? And we, again, how we program, we always think, what is going on right now? And how can we utilize music and our programming to enhance the understanding and the appreciation for what's happening and to create an empowering message for our students? And what we thought about was a lot of people over the last 2 years since the onset of the pandemic, everyone had their own issues to differing degrees. For children, a lot of them felt really isolated. And that's why music, keeping that alive over Zoom and all of the online programming was really, really important, because it gave them a sense of connection. We realized how music really was so therapeutic for through that entire time, because we got a lot of feedback from the students. So that was another aha moment, like, wow, music doesn't just build your confidence. It's actually therapy. It's actually part of wellness. It's actually part of mental health, emotional health. And when we realized that, we thought, let's focus an entire season on wellness, and let's entitle this year Thrive, on the basis that over the last few years, the students have been utilizing music in order to survive. Now that the acute part of the pandemic is behind us, and society has generally, gone back to many of the things it has been doing before, let's now move out of the place of where they're trying to survive. And now let's move into thrive. How can music be part of a larger understanding of what you need in order to be your best self? What are your needs? What are the things that you need in your life to feel nourished? For every person, the list is different, but we need food, water. I believe we need music. We need love. There's an article that I read that said for a young person, it takes 4 hugs a day to survive, and it takes 8 hugs a day to thrive. And so it's really important for our students. We told them this, that this is what the year is about. We really want you to think about, what do you need in order to thrive in your life? Think about that, because only you can create that for yourself as your life progresses. And this season, we want to get you to think about thriving, being your best, and what do you need in order to make that happen? And how does music play into that overall sense of well-being? So that's our programming for the year. We're singing music at Carnegie Hall in May. And of course, we had the album released this fall. And going into the summer, students will be traveling to Denmark and to Norway. And again, there's a whole wellness aspect to the international experience that they'll be having there. That's basically what the year is about.
That's amazing. I love the 4 hugs and 8 hugs, that analogy. So 4 hugs to feel loved and 8 to thrive. Is that what it was?
Yes.
I love that. That is so clever. The way to kind of, because you kind of really get a clear picture on that, and almost an alternative definition of thriving. Like, I never thought of thrive in that way, but that's really clever. I like that.
Yeah. And the way the article described it was so visceral. You just imagine being a young person and you say you received those 4 hugs, you feel like adequately receiving a certain amount, someone's being attentive to you at an adequate level. But at 8 hugs, you are like on cloud 9. You just feel absolute. You are so loved. You are ready to go. You're like, I am here to thrive and be my best. And so there's a certain amount that we need to just barely make it. And then there's a certain amount that will help launch us. And let's create an environment for every person should, where you have everything that you need to be your best. Because only then can you be in the true creative state to make this world a better place.
Yeah, excellent. I love all of that. That's really, really great. And to teach that to kids and having that as being part of the whole ethos of the new season or the new year going forward, I think is so awesome. Last question for you, success. To kind of wrap things up, lots of really great subjects here that we touched on. But when you kind of look back on everything and you can kind of boil it down to something, whether that's professional or personal or a little bit of both, what does success mean to you?
Well, that definition has changed as I've grown up and learned and experienced things. I thought success was one thing, and now I have a different view of that. I think success is a certain balance that you can feel within yourself, where your work and your passion is adequately integrated with important personal human relationships. I used to always say that what I do or what I achieve is the most important. And I used to joke around with people and just, say things like, second is the highest you'll ever be, because what I do in my work is always number one. And I learned that that's wrong, because the most important thing in life is not achievements, accomplishments, and things. People are the most important thing. Relationships are the most important thing. Yet at the same time, yes, what you do for the world, what you contribute to the lives of the community, that's also extremely important. So I would say your relationships and the love in your life, number one. Achievements cannot be, you will never be truly successful, in my opinion, if you have it in the wrong priority order. And so underneath that is what you can give and what you contribute. And so I think the integration and the balance of those two things, and the understanding that people are the most important thing. There's no thing that's more important than a person. The understanding of that is really important to achieving a life of success. Because at the end of the day, And the reason I say people are the most important thing is because love is the most important thing. And so you can't love a thing, you know, I mean, you sort of can, but that connection between two people, there's nothing more powerful than that. And in fact, everything that you do and all of the passions that you pursue should really work to enhance those human connections, understanding that human connection is number one and really is the key to a joyful, happy, and fulfilled life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Classical Post. If you loved it, give us a 5-star review as it helps us reach more people. Also, remember to hit that follow button in your podcast app to get notified of new episodes.